The In Radio. In Radio. Podcast. In
Radio. Hello and welcome to a special edition of the In Radio podcast. I'm Dom Chambers, and today we have something of a departure from the usual format, because this podcast was recorded live at the National Community Media Conference, which took place in Sheffield in September. Now, this is organised annually by the Community Media Association, and this year, with a great deal of imagination, I think, the conference went under the theme of We Are the Future, and it was curated by five people under the age of 25. So when I tell you that the theme of the podcast is the future of radio, it is in the context not only of that conference theme, but also we should bear in mind that this is an event attended by people involved in making audio and radio from an independent, grassroots and community background.
The In Radio Podcast with Dom Chambers.
In Radio.
Welcome to the In Radio Podcast. We are live at the Community Media Conference 2018, and we have a fine panel joining me on the stage here as we consider the future of radio. A nice, wide-open topic we thought we'd bring you today, but I suspect, given our location, we will be dwelling on that which is grassroots, that which is independent, and that which is community radio. So this is the part of the day of the Community Media Conference we focus on the future of radio. Joining me on the stage is Carolyn Powers, is the Senior Programme Officer coordinating US programmes at Internews. This includes the Listening Post Collective, which is a national community news initiative. Carolyn has experience designing programmes with independent journalists, small news outlets and local organisations interested in listening to their diverse communities, building trust and creating more relevant, inclusive media. Carolyn has a proclivity for writing long sentences. She helps to promote listening and engaged journalism strategies in Internews' programmes globally. Outside of the daytime job, Carolyn has led a storytelling course with college students in Kigali and Rwanda. And if that is not sufficient, she has also served as a community organizer in the Boston area. Okay, I've been to Boston. That needs a bit of organizing from time to time, so you've got your work cut out on all levels here. Lucinda Guy has a background in community development, arts and music, and has been artistic director of Sound Art Radio in South Devon since 2006. As a radio producer, Lucinda has made dramas, documentaries, and audio collages for broadcasters worldwide, and is soon to launch Skylark, a new FM station for Dartmoor. She is also the chair of the national representative organisation, the Community Media Association. John Jenkins is a presenter at Gateway 97.8, the award-winning community station based in Basildon. He's been involved in radio since the age of 14, off to university in a few weeks' time. That is, it's a few weeks' time, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, next week.
Oh, well, next week, okay. Right, stop press. Off to university next week. He is going to be studying politics and to pursue a career in political journalism thereafter. Currently presenting the Sunday Weekend Breakfast show, John says, I love presenting radio and finding stories. I also enjoy interviewing guests on my show to give people a platform to voice their views. I like to get involved in everything that I can, which presumably explains your presence here today. Well done. Laurie Hallett, or Dr. Laurie Hallett, is a senior lecturer in radio journalism at the University of Bedfordshire. He has worked in broadcasting all his adult life as a broadcast consultant specializing in technology and community-based broadcasting. He has produced and presented on stations in the UK and Europe. Before moving to the University of Bedfordshire, Laurie was part of Ofcom's radio team, where he developed and implemented policies around community radio and DAB. When not teaching or involved in research, Laurie can often be found making radio programmes for the sheer pleasure of it. That's the best motivation, I would think, of all. And when not doing that, he tinkers with old steam engines or steam locomotives, it says here. Now, I wonder, with the nostalgia as we look back on the likes of the Flying Scotsman, if we, in a few years' time, we'd be looking back on a golden age of radio and those marvellously clipped accents that I was talking about earlier. But we shall see. We shall see. Is there a relevancy for steam? Is there a relevancy for radio? That is the subject of our discussion today, Conference 2018. Please welcome our panel. Now, some of you know this is happening and some of you don't, so if you don't, I'm afraid you're a bit stuffed. Carolyn, would you mind starting us off? Give a 1 minute each, you know, 1 to 2 minutes, on where you see radio and where you see its future.
Yeah, sure. So, Carolyn Powers here. I live in Washington, D.C., and personally, I am a massive radio listener. I literally switch on a radio every morning when I wake up. So I hope the future of the radio is super bright. And according to a lot of statistics in the US and the UK right now, radio is still the largest mass reached medium out there. And right now it's continuing to grow. So 100 years later, we are still seeing how popular radio really is. And I think that we can kind of reflect on why that is. I mean, it is relatively cheap. It is super accessible, but most importantly, it's very, very local. And I think that people respond well to that. They hear stories, they hear voices, they know the information that's out there is super relevant to them. And it's fun. I think that that's another piece of radio. It is really fun. You can be super creative. And so I see it going in many directions. Obviously, the digital transition is huge. It's allowing more and more stations to come online. Also, how we're listening to radio is really changing. Online, satellite, on your phone. It's making local radio more accessible internationally. So I think we can really think about what communities we're reaching in a more specific way, thinking about diaspora communities that are listening to radio. You know, in Sheffield, they might be listening to a radio station in, who knows, South Sudan, for example. So I think there's many directions radio is going to go. It's not a dead medium. Are we in a new golden age? We may be.
Yeah, I think so. What have we done? Oh, dear. I should mention that the theme of today's conference is We Are the Future, and we've had a number of people from where I'm sitting a long way off in distance in time, in their rejoicing life, in their early 20s, and one of those is John. So highly appropriate, I think, that we've got somebody who's established a love of radio but is embarking out on possibly a career in it.
Yeah, that's the plan. I did work experience with the station I'm at now when I was 14. I was presenting a show at the age of 15. It was a magazine show. One of my first guests was a politician called Anne-Marie Waters. Okay, and she's based in Thurrock, which is near where I am in Basildon, in Essex, down in the southeast. And Anne-Marie Waters is one of the most controversial members of UKIP. Okay, so it was an interesting guest. It was my second or third guest I had in. And lo and behold, a little bit later on in the 2017 election, just afterwards, she was standing to be UKIP's leader. And it was the big controversy. Would Anne-Marie Waters, whatever, you know, all names under the sun were being thrown at her. And I'm thinking, well, she's in the community that I'm broadcasting from. She's been on the show because it's community. And you asked the question at the beginning, is radio relevant? We wouldn't be here if radio was irrelevant, would we? But I must admit, I don't own a radio. I had a radio, and now I've got one of these smart speakers. You talk to it, and it turns the lights on and does, you know, I don't even know what it does. I don't know half the things it does. But if I want to listen to the radio, I start it by saying, OK, Google, and I can pick any station in the world. So surely, maybe I don't have a radio, but surely this sort of smart medium makes it more accessible to all. When I get home, I'm switching on each of your stations every day for the next couple of months. So I listen to your breakfast show to see what you're talking about and switch it on the smart speaker. So the future of radio for me is all about working together. We've got these We Are the Future. We've got the five young curators here today. But five people aren't going to change the world, are they? We need to work together and to sort of hand the baton over. I'm not saying give it to me right now. I want to take over your jobs and run your life. But I'm saying it's a progression, isn't it? So I think the future for me is all about working together. It's about community, not just inside the community, but the station is a community in itself.
Well, thank you very much for that, John. What's emerging so far as we come across our panel here is that there is a need both locally, regionally and globally for audio information and entertainment, but it's the platform of delivery that is diversifying very much. Now, Lucinda, you have a strong background in arts and obviously radio as well. So how does that sort of fuse to you, and what's your view about the future?
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, so, and a really interesting place often to look for where ideas are coming from is right on the fringes. And there's some very exciting radio artists who are really exploring transmission and the possibilities of transmission. So when we think about radio, we need to think about its place on the electromagnetic spectrum as much as its place in culture. And talking about changing technologies, it's really good to look at different technologies such as, you know, the book. And in recent years, there was talk of, will it be the end of the book? Is everybody going to use an e-reader? And book designers responded to that by making books that you wanted to touch and feel and pick up and turn the pages of more and more. Book design has really evolved. Another thing that's happened with is vinyl records. You know, there was a sort of, oh, vinyl is over. And then, of course, you know, the grassroots kind of said, okay, now we can download our music. What's special about vinyl? What's unique to vinyl? The design, the shape, the feel, the object. And it's found its niche. And actually, the more technologies come along, the more the old ones find their niche and what's peculiar to them. And I think this is happening with analog radio as well, that's, you know, we heard this morning people's worries about social media, how is our data used, how is our privacy affected. Now, the great thing with analog radio is it's very, very private in terms of the broadcaster and the audience. And we're seeing people kind of sometimes choosing to actually switch off online, go back to analog technologies. So I think they're far from over. I think they're just finding their niche and their role in the society we've got now and what's still special and what's important about them.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And you've got an exciting project coming up. And before we come to Laurie here, just perhaps a very, very quick overview of Skylark.
Yes, so I'm going to be launching a new station called Skylark. And this is the first time there's been a full-time permanent station that doesn't play any programs at all. It's going to play one continuous piece of music created by everybody in the community. It's for Dartmoor National Park, and the music will be a composite of lots of oral histories, field recordings, songs, poems, all kinds of things, weaving a continuous, ever-changing collage. So it won't have any programs at all. And this is my interest, is what else can radio still do that it's never done? Because actually, when we think of radio, we're often thinking of formats such as a breakfast show, a chat show. Those are formats that arose quite early in our cultural sort of history of radio. And there's many, many other ways it could still go, even on analog radio. So, like I say, finding its niche and what's unique about that.
I love that idea. Where can radio go that it hasn't already been so far? Laurie, you've got quite a technical background, and from that point of view, where do you see the future going? Because we're talking about platforms of delivery diversifying, aren't we?
Yeah, platforms are boring. They're not relevant, frankly. What you actually need to look at is, what's the content? What's the storytelling? What are we actually making radio for? When I worked here in Sheffield in the early 2000s, I wrote a piece for Peter De Witt, might be here, from the CMFE Europe, and it was a research project done for the Dutch government. And in that I said, we are coming to a time where the platforms are irrelevant. They don't matter. And one of the problems is that in the English language, we confuse radio. We confuse radio, the box in the corner, with radio, the platform. And actually, who cares? What you want is to be able to get the programming that you're interested in the most flexible and easy way that is for you to consume. So the big changes are in terms of personalization of radio. So picking different radio stations that we wouldn't be able to listen to 10, 15 years ago. And that's the really big change. So, for example, the community radio station that I'm involved in Norwich has a lot of listeners in the US. Now, they listen to that station in Norwich because either there is specific programming they're interested in, or they have some relationship with Norfolk and Norwich. So they may have family there, or they may have gone to university there, they may have had visits there as children, or whatever it might be. But we find that the diaspora community that we're broadcasting to with some of our programming is much more diverse and much more geographically spread than it used to be. I've been being told since I was 14 that, why are you getting into radio? It's a dead medium. You know, I've been told that radio is dead all my adult life when I've been working in radio. And what we find is it gets bigger and wider and more diverse. Where platforms are important is that they do allow that diversification. So podcasts, for example, allow you to move into types of programming which the sort of linear traditional way of running radio is not very comfortable with. It allows you to go into more detail. It allows you to have much more of a niche focus. I had a student at my university last year who was fascinated by wrestling. And so he made a wrestling program. And that wrestling program, when he left university, he walked straight into working in that area of sports. He's traveling to the US, he's traveling to Europe all the time, interviewing these wrestlers and their managers. And he has made a niche for him, and a program that was produced at the university is listened to worldwide. So, you know, platforms, having said they're not important, they do at least give more access to more content, and it's the content that matters.
And I love that. I mean, the platforms are boring. It's all about the content, and I'm 100% behind that. However, I'm going to ask you one more question about those platforms. And obviously, here in the UK, there's a lot of talk going on right now. We're in a process of licensing DAB for small operators, which I think pretty well applies to everybody attending here today. We've obviously got the smart speaker. FM is continuing to be licensed for the sort of grassroots community radio sectors. So lots of platforms. Do you see the advance of DAB as having a really significant place in the UK radio industry going forward?
I think that one of the things about broadcasting is it's a platform which has no add-on cost per listener. That's the fundamental thing about broadcasting. If I'm running a radio station, I'm broadcasting to my mum, it costs me exactly the same amount as if I'm running a radio station that is broadcasting to 20, 30, 40,000 people. Once you've got the infrastructure, there's no add-on cost per listener. Unlike in telecoms, where as soon as you start streaming, you pay per listener. The fundamental difference is you pay for range in the old-fashioned broadcasting technologies, but you don't pay for additional listeners. In terms of online technologies, you pay per listener, but range is irrelevant. People can listen in Australia as well as they can listen next door. So there are fundamental differences. The thing about DAB is it's probably a transition technology. In other words, what it does is it solves the problem that FM has always had, that there simply isn't enough space. So to go back to my Norwich example, we had one community radio station in Norwich. We now broadcast 20 services on DAB, and those services cover a wide range of different types of content. But I think that if you look at the rise of the smart speaker, for example, we will see that effectively, as is usual with technology, everything shuffles sideways to accommodate the new technology, but the specific impact of those older technologies tends to decrease over time. The peak for DAB, I think, is some way off, but it will peak and then it will decline, and who knows what else will come along after the smart speaker.
So in that spectrum, do you think there's going to be a need to license radio in the UK?
I think when you're talking about broadcasting, there are various reasons for licensing, but one of the key reasons is that you're regulating scarcity. If there is a resource where you've got more people wanting to use it than there is resource available, you have to find some way of sharing that out, hopefully in a fairly equitable manner. So I don't think you can have a free-for-all of broadcast spectrum. We don't regulate internet-based services to the same extent because there isn't really a finite limit on the number of services that you can run. But on broadcast, if you don't have some mechanism of sharing things fairly, then what you end up is monopolies in waiting.
Okay, well, thanks very much for that. Now, I hope you're all preparing questions because I'm definitely going to come to the floor in a moment. One of the things that links where we are now to the future and the past, then, is making radio that resonates with the listener. That's what it's all about. And if it doesn't, then it kind of goes away, really. In the community sector, we are very much, as we've heard some evidence for on the day so far, we are very much about empowering voices that you're not going to hear on other networks, and that will impact on their personal development and their well-being, but it also impacts on audiences. So as we kind of go about the business of, I'm sort of widening it sort of just from community radio because I want to be inclusive of non-licensed stations as well. So if we can kind of sort of think in terms of grassroots and independent is such a crucial word I feel these days, and of course community radio, perhaps we could just have a quick thought from each of you about what makes good content and how we go about gathering that to offer our listeners. So let's start with you, Carolyn.
So a really interesting project that I've worked on in the U.S. was in New Orleans. And New Orleans is a city that is very diverse, but it also, there are several communities that are left out of the local media, community media included. And so we had partnered with a local radio station there to, you know, get more voices, get more content. And one of the things that we did was have kind of coffee shops. And so someone from the radio station would have kind of a weekly discussion with community members just to hear, you know, what is happening in your community? What is interesting this week? Let's talk about a certain topic. And from there, we're able to really kind of explore different routes with them. Another example is in North Omaha, Nebraska. We have worked with really interesting students up there who are basically, can I pass? I'm getting a little stage fright.
No, that's fine. You're doing terribly well. And it's really interesting. I have to say, it's great having a more global perspective, having you, you flew in from Washington, is that right?
Washington, yes.
Excellent, good.
Yes.
All right, well now, one of the things you said in your New Orleans section there reminded me of a station I visited in Glasgow called Sunny Govan. Anyone from Sunny Govan here today? They have outside, it's in what you might describe as a fairly unpromising part of town. And outside of their studios, they have a bench. And on that bench, you can sit. And you don't have to pay 50p for a cup of tea. You can sit on that bench gratis. And conversations start on that bench, and it spills into the studios behind. That radio station is at the heart of community development and people's well-being to the point of keeping them out of prison and also getting them into proper housing. So I can see in a city like New Orleans, this could be really
relevant.
Exactly.
I mean, and there's other interesting spaces like that in the U.S. and probably here that, you know, as long as you are present and you are physically present in your community, then people will show up. And there's a coffee space in Oakland, California that is similar to this. They have, it's a co-working space, but they also have, you know, public space out front where people can come by, get ice cream, hang out. And so when you start to really meet people on this individual basis and understand what their needs are, then you can kind of get these really interesting stories that you know will resonate.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Now, just a reminder that these conversations I don't want to say join the conversation. That's for someone else to say. But social media, of course, Twitter, we're particularly keen on. There's four Twitter handles there. It is hashtag WeAreTheFuture and hashtag CMA18. And another one I use is hashtag RadioConversations. So by the time you've looped everybody in on the Twitter handles and the hashtags, you haven't got any chance to say anything. But make of it what you will. Have we got anyone on Twitter at the moment?
There's a few questions on Twitter so far on the Radio Conversations hashtag.
Well, it's good to know we've got the questions, and I'll come back to you momentarily. It's about content, John.
And we've all heard the cliched phrase that content is king, but for me, it's all about being engaged. I'm not talking about the listener. I need to be engaged, right? People say young people have the attention span of a goldfish. They're probably not wrong. But so when I'm in the studio, I have to be interested in what they're saying, what they're telling me, because otherwise the listeners aren't going to care either. For me, it's also about taking risks. So two guests on my show recently come to mind. Two risks I took. I arrived in the morning and I didn't think either of them would show up, but they both did. The first was a drug dealer, okay, that joined me on the show. I don't know his name. No one ever told me his name. I didn't meet him on the streets. It was arranged for me. And he was dealing hard drugs at the age of 15, okay. He was sat opposite me with his mum. His mum was in tears during the interview because he was talking so openly about dealing drugs and, you know, going around school with it in his backpack, you know, scared for his life. Who's going to ring me? I've got to pick up this phone because it's a deal. This is going to get money, but I don't want to talk to them. They can do anything to me. He said, my face is too well known around here. That's why I was never told his name. The second one that springs to mind, a guy called Warren Richardson. He's an internationally acclaimed photographer. He joined me in on my show last week, actually, and he has travelled the world and done a project in probably every country I can think of. But the one he's doing at the moment, he is sort of acting homeless. So he's not homeless. Um, he He's not based in the UK, he's from Europe, but he's not homeless. But he's living on the streets for a month, living in the community with these homeless people. He's telling them, you know, he's very open with them and tells them what he's doing. It's not like, you know, he's pulling the wool over their eyes. But he's living in Southend, which is just outside of where we broadcast in Basildon. That's where I'm from, in Southend. And he's living homeless, and he come in and started telling me all about all the worries of all the homeless people. You know, these voices we don't get to hear. Who invites a drug dealer and a homeless person onto the show, you know, within a couple of weeks of each other? And that was a risk I took. But sitting there across from them, I was so engaged. And at the end of it, I was almost sort of in shock of what I've just heard and editing it for tomorrow's show or whatever. And the listener's reaction was exactly how I felt. They were engaged and they were interested, and they were shocked and surprised and upset and sorry, or whatever their emotions they were feeling were exactly what I was feeling. So if I'm engaged, then they are too.
That's a fantastic example. It's brilliant when something unexpected happens in a conversation and it hits a whole new platter. Lucinda, content.
Yeah, I mean, you were using words grassroots and independent, and that makes me think of location-specific radio and how we respond to place and environment. And those might be, you know, geographical features as much as social ones. The difference between being based on a mountain or on the coast or in the middle of a city. So I think it's, for me, I'm very interested in, you know, how unique we can be and how, not just when we think about what kind of feature shall I make today, but maybe things like how should we design this studio, or, you know, what sort of technology we should use. We can reinvent all these things. The studio can be anything, you know. And with Skylark Project, there isn't a fixed studio. We've said the studio is the whole of Dartmoor, but your studio might be in a vehicle, or it might be in a coffee shop, or because each community is very different and each place is very different. And the more we respond to that place, the more exciting and unique our content is and the more relevant it is to the people who live there.
Well, I can hear the show now from the Grimpen Mire. Isn't that on Dartmoor? That's the Hound of the Baskervilles.
Right. Yeah.
Laurie. Content.
So I think the thing about content, people have been talking about how you find those stories. Where do you get those stories from? And importantly, giving voice to people who are largely ignored by the mainstream media. I mean, if you look in all sorts of aspects of life, you find that there is a mainstream dialogue which is run through the mainstream media, and there are voices of individuals and communities and subgroups within the community that are not regularly heard. But from a broadcaster's point of view, I think the important thing is knowing how to facilitate those stories, how to bring those people on board and how to tell those stories, because a radio station is effectively an interim stage in the conversation between the person that's telling the story and the people who are listening. So the trick that becomes important is how do you use the medium of radio effectively to make sure that those stories are told? Because there is a skill in broadcasting, there is a skill in editing, there is a skill in the social interaction with the people that you're working with to give them the confidence to tell their stories. And it's not necessarily that the radio station has to be a barrier or a break between those two people, because training is a really important area. Giving people who have never used a radio station before, who've never broadcast on the radio, giving them the tools to tell their own stories. And I think that is a really important area, because let's be honest about it, making radio programs is not really that difficult. What you're actually doing is you're using your knowledge and you're telling stories, or you're facilitating other people's stories, and there's a certain element of technological competence to take that audio and deliver that audio so that the audience finds it engaging. But it's actually not that difficult. What it needs, like lots of things in life, is a bit of practice. And it needs exposure to those skills. I often think back to when I left school with very poor qualifications and think to myself, if I hadn't found radio as a pirate radio operator to start with and then in legal radio, if I hadn't actually found that, where would I be today? Not a question I like to answer, really. But I think the point is that if you get into anything, and radio is just like any other area where people get interested, you can use that technology effectively. The trick is to be in a position where you can facilitate other people to use it as well.
Yeah, thanks for that. And it's so worth mentioning the volunteer-orientated sectors of radio, which you just touched on there. I turned up to a hospital radio, and 2 years later I was sending demo tapes out. And then I found myself doing the rock show. Only room for one Tommy Vance, though, so I went and retrained in news. The Twitter handles are inradiopodcast at @community_media. #CMA18. Can we go to who's on Twitter and a question for our panel, perhaps?
Yeah, well, there's actually quite a few questions so far, so I'll just try and do them justice very quickly. Question from Ms. Crow. Content is king, but what are the challenges of attracting an audience to it? Also another question from a guy called Terry Lee. I don't know if you want to ask your question yourself, but is the availability of radio studio footage such as LBC and Chris Moyles on social media a sign of things to come in the consumption of radio, or just a temporary trend? And then final question, maybe from, I saw one from Grant on Sunday. How much is community radio involving people of all ages to participate in broadcasting? What's our future in a digital world? All up for debate.
Okay, thanks very much. I think where we're going to steer ourselves then is content is king indeed, but how are we engaging audiences? Indeed, is it important to our work to engage audiences? Let's start this end.
It's a good question. I actually don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with a community group running a radio station that really isn't listened to, because that community involvement, that community development can work within the radio station, and listeners may choose to listen to it, they may not. On the other hand, if you're looking at broadcasting where you're looking at a scarce resource, maybe there is an argument that says there should at least be some audience for it. Terry was asking the point about whether social media is an important element, and I think it is, but we have to remember one thing about radio. Radio has one big advantage over anything that's screen-based, and that is that you can be doing the washing up and listening to the radio. So screen-based content is a good adjunct to what is at the core of radio, the sound, the audio, the conversation, but it isn't ever going to replace it, because then you can't do the washing up at the same time.
Oh, thank you for that. So engaging audiences. Now, for me, Lucinda, running a community radio station, audiences start with the 15-year-old kid that you've put on, and mum, dad and auntie Glad are listening in, and it kind of mushrooms from there. How's it for you?
Yeah, that's just what I was thinking. I was just thinking of the... I've forgotten his name. Sorry, the guy who's the chair of the UNESCO chair. And at an event I was at a couple of years ago, he was saying, people in community radio often ask, how do we grow our audience? And the question should be, how do we grow our, you know, people who are involved? And actually, they are the same thing. When we say community, there's a community of people who are taking part, listening, their friends are listening, they pop in as guests, those kind of things. If you want to grow audience, grow participation first, and let it grow from there. And that doesn't mean you're not ambitious. You can be massively ambitious with participation. For example, what if you get every child in a school to have a poem on air? There might be 2,000 children in that school, and they've got great big families around them as well. I would say be ambitious, but let it kind of mushroom. We don't need to approach audience development in the way other types of media do. We've got our own approaches, I suppose.
Yeah, so if you get it right at the heart of the station with your volunteers, the chances are, obviously with good guidance around content as well, the chances are, I would say, that you're going to start engaging a much wider constituency. John, how's it up at Gateway?
Well, it's all about organic growth, isn't it? The more people you meet, the more people you introduce yourself to that visit you in the studio or you visit them, the more people are going to listen. So if you have 30 10-year-old kids come in and sing a Christmas carol in December, then all of their parents are going to be listening. And they might think on the Sunday morning, oh, we met that guy over on Friday, let's hear his show, let's see what he talks about. And then they hear the 15-year-old drug dealer. But and just quickly on what Terry was saying about social media, you can't listen to more than one station at once, or, you know, unless you've got some weird system that I don't know about. But following, if I'm on Twitter or something, I'm following LBC, Talk Radio, the Today programme, and that's just in the morning. I can hear sort of the best bits. I can just hear the little interview, the two-minute grab that they've put on, over on Twitter, and I've just listened to three radio shows in the space of 10 minutes. So maybe there is a space for radio and social media, but it's a bit strange when you're watching them in the studio and you think, why am I watching radio? This isn't how it's supposed to work. But I think there definitely is a space for social media and radio to interact.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think we can't just expect people to find us anymore. We can't expect people to go through a radio dial. So how are you engaging your audience so that you can find them and then bring them in to help you create that content? And also, I mean, be creative about what that content is. It, of course, radio will probably be your main output, but that content can probably be recycled into a newsletter or into a community discussion at a local school. There are many ways that we can just kind of be a little creative about the content we already have in hand so we can just spread that further.
Okay, thanks very much. Some great points being made. I do want to open this up to the audience. Has anyone got a burning desire to ask a question of our fine panel here? And we are running out of time, so I'm going to take the most enthusiastic hand to lift towards the ceiling. Absolute stum, you see. We've done such a fine job on explaining the future of radio, so therefore, I'm going to put my own hand up. Carolyn, I can't pass up the opportunity, I think, to talk about the value of media literacy with you being here. Perhaps you could just very briefly describe what media literacy is and then how you see that impacting on radio going forward.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think you can look at media literacy in a couple ways. One, just from consumption, you know, making sure that you can think with a critical mind when you are consuming media, but also media literacy to me is really understanding how journalism and media works. And I think part of our job can be including the community in that process and making sure that people really understand what it takes to make a story, what it takes to understand and listen to people authentically, and to represent their voice. I mean, that really takes a certain skill. And when you get the audience to really understand the amount of work and passion that you bring to your job, that can really help educate them in their media literacy.
Okay, yeah. Great, and great sense of mission there. Does anyone else have anything to say on this particular thing? Yeah.
Just one point about media literacy, and that is that I think if you look at what Ofcom did here in the UK some years ago, it did a lot of work on media literacy, which has kind of petered out. And one of the things that I think is most important is the element of media literacy which gets people to understand where the message is coming from. You know, why does the Daily Mail take one view and the Guardian take another and BBC do things one way and commercial radio do things another way? Understanding that what you read, what you hear, what you see is not necessarily all that's there. And media literacy helps do that. But importantly, community media, because it gives those different voices and because it can spend time looking at things, it can get behind the scenes of stories, particularly local stories in geographical stations, in a way that other media simply can't do.
Well, thank you very much for that. And we're going to bring this podcast to a close now. I'm sensing that the future of radio is pretty good. Actually, this is the fourth conference I've attended. I tend to speak about community radio, you know, with other sectors of the radio industry. And I think there is wide acceptance that the future of radio in the UK, and I'm therefore assuming the globe as well, is in a good place. The only thing is, in a few years' time, we may not be actually calling it radio, but there will always be a need for audio, entertainment, and information. On that tremendous note, I'd like to bring our podcast to a close. Thank you very much for coming. Well, what an interesting discussion that was, touching on some really pertinent areas that we can feed into that wider debate about what is the future of radio here in the UK. And one of those other conferences I referred to in there, which explored the theme of the future of radio, was the European Radio Show, which took place last year in Paris, when it was the turn of the UK's radio industry to be profiled. I spoke for community licensees, but also there were contributions from right across the spectrum of commercial radio, and the BBC were there as well, not to mention representation from the UK government in the form of a senior civil servant from the Department of Culture, Media and Sport. By the way, I think that was before they inserted the word digital into DCMS. A lot of the dialogue was couched in different terms at that event, but very much headed to similar places that we established more recently at the Sheffield Conference. In radio, I'm hugely grateful for the panel members John Jenkins, Carolyn Powers, Lucinda Guy and Laurie Hallett. And also to the CMA for allowing me to host the podcast there. I have to say, there was a real buzz that day as people came together from all over the UK and beyond. That showed the sheer range and diversity of people and organisations involved in what is loosely termed as community media. And by the way, some of what we touched on there about the need for good storytelling skills and gathering content that will engage the listener leads me nicely to the theme of my next podcast. And I'll leave you with the words of Valerie Geller, who says, "There is no such thing as a bad story, only bad storytellers." More about that next time. In the meantime, if you'd like to get in touch with the podcast, do email me at dom.chambers@radiotoday.co.uk. And if you'd like me to visit a radio station, or you've got any ideas for future themes of the programme, do get in touch. And I'll catch you back here very soon. In radio.